Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
With Danny, I'm Grant. You are locked in to 106.7 The Fan, and it is time, as it will be every day now at 4 o'clock on this show, to give you your Beltway Blitz, the three teams in town you care the most about. We'll jam a lot of info into one segment for you, so let's get it started right now on the football field. J.P. Finley, NBC Sports Washington. What did you make of the 31-23 loss to the Bucs on Saturday night?
Well, I mean, there was the obvious kind of emotional roller coaster of it all. And just watching Taylor Heinicke put on that kind of a performance was really just fun. But there's some holes for this team to get really good, like we think maybe they can. Going to be defensively driven. I think you need better linebacker play. I think you need some help at corner. And those outside of quarterback are the two biggest holes to me. And then you need a receiver help. I like Cam Sims a lot, but they need a veteran number two guy opposite Terry. And then Cam and Steve, all these other Sims, then you've got other options. Maybe Gandy Golden can develop. But, at the end of the year, I think there's a lot to be encouraged by if you're a Washington football fan.
J.P. Lossman-Finley, how would you grade this season? I mean, we were kicking this around earlier. Just in context, they were 3-13 last year. A bunch of young guys got a lot better. Even guys that aren't young but new to the position, like Logan Thomas, went from maybe liability to pretty legit weapon as the season progressed. They got a lot out of McKissick, and again, we mentioned the young players. How do you view this season ultimately? Success, kind of meh, because they went 7-9, and it ended badly. What do you think?
I view it as a success, Danny. I mean, people can make fun of the NFC East, but Washington getting to 7-9 after being 3-13, that's a success for them. And just because the Eagles and the Cowboys fell apart doesn't mean that Washington didn't succeed in more than doubling their win total. I think they've identified a ton of young players that are going to help them going forward. I was listening when you guys had Ron on earlier, and that was awesome, and he talked about 28 guys on rookie deals play significant roles this year. That's huge, and that allows them the flexibility salary cap wise to maybe spend big at a couple positions, maybe including quarterback. So they've got some real options and are in a position. Windows are generally really short in the NFL unless you have a great quarterback. I think they have a position in the next 2 or 3 years to try to make a run at something legitimate, and I don't think we could say that maybe that first Gibbs playoff team, but I don't think you could really say that in the last 20 years. The first Gibbs 2.0 playoff team.
They won the division almost solely because of their defense. That's how they got to the playoffs. And they got eliminated, honestly, because of their defense. They were bad on Saturday. They gave up 507 yards and over 7 yards per play to the Bucs. Chase Young had all of 2 pressures, and John Allen didn't have nearly as big a game as he needed to. What went wrong? Rivera told us he was surprised with how poorly they played and how bad of the matchup was against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I didn't think defensively they were going to really shine in that situation. Chase didn't get enough pressure, and I think it's overly simplified to say he like played poorly because he still did a lot of other things, but your star players, big-time players make big-time plays in big-time games, and that didn't happen from Young. You can't have secondary breakdowns against Brady, Antonio Brown. But I think this Bucs team is playing really well at the right time offensively. And sometimes you're just going to kind of run into a buzzsaw. I think it's going to happen whenever they play New Orleans this weekend. I think the Bucs are hot. When you add Antonio Brown onto that team, you're adding arguably the greatest. Like, once he gets his mind right and knows the offense, I mean, he's for a long stretch, he was the best receiver in football. And that offense was already pretty explosive. So I just think Washington has to figure out their secondary. They need better pressure from both ends. And Daron Payne, to win that game, I thought John Allen and Daron Payne would need to play the game of their life. I think Daron Payne did, but John Allen wasn't able to match that.
Jackson Pollock-Finley, what's going to happen at the quarterback spot? How likely do you think it is that Alex Smith is back, retired, released for cap purposes? Kyle Allen, Taylor Heinicke, draft pick. How's that mix going to go?
I don't know, Danny. From a pure the business of football pragmatic standpoint, you can't bring Alex back at 22 mil. There was a stretch there where it looked like you could, honestly, after that Cowboys game and the Pittsburgh win. But whatever's going on with this calf, and maybe it's more than a calf, as I kind of alluded to yesterday, that price tag and his age and his injury history is just not something you can do. He was going to be on the books in 2020 regardless because of the contract, but there's off ramps in 2021. I think maybe you try to reach a buyout or maybe he'll agree to some sort of reduction. I don't know that he will. I don't know why he would. But I think you kind of got to turn the page. And I wouldn't have said that in early December, but in early January, after seeing what this injury did and really limiting him, it's hard to think there wouldn't be more injuries for a 37-year-old quarterback going forward. And if Alex is off the books, that opens the door to really spending big at QB. I think Dak Prescott would be phenomenal for this team. I don't think Dak's going to get to the open market, but if he did, I'd go to 45 a year or whatever it takes for him. If that's not possible, I would certainly call about Deshaun Watson, whether or not that happens. After that, I'm probably a little bit pickier than others. I don't know that Matt Stafford and Matt Ryan. I think I'm alone that I'd rather have Ryan over Stafford, I think. The back injury really scares me with Stafford. I don't know that any of these guys are going to come available. What about a guy like Derek Carr? I mean, John Gruden's always kind of hated him. Maybe he becomes available. And then there's Barney.
I think the Raiders quarterback that'd be available is Mariota.
Is Mariota, right?
Maybe. I mean, Carr had a really good year this year. But last year when they signed Mariota, it was kind of the push Carr. So that marriage has never seemed totally wholesome, but maybe this year has changed that. I don't know. And maybe it's Mariota, maybe it's Darnold, and you have a real competition with Allen and Heinicke, and you see where the chips fall. I think that would be a wild training camp, but I don't know that that's the best they can do. You know, with the 19th pick, I don't think you're getting a stud QB. And I think they want a mobile guy, so I don't know that Mac Jones, the Bama kid, is really the guy for them. I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to watch. I really don't know.
Thanks, JP. Much appreciated. Let's talk some hoops. Who is healthy for the Wizards? I guess let's direct that question to Chase Hughes of NBC Sports Washington and NBCSportsWashington.com. Chase, 2-8, worst record in the East, worst record in the NBA, not ideal, and bodies dropping like flies. What's going on right now with the health of this team? Take us to who's going to be out for the next few games.
Well, first of all, congrats, and it's an honor to be on your guys' first show. But it's, in that regard, the Wizards are in trouble right now. I mean, they just lost Thomas Bryant for the season, a partially torn ACL. He was their third leading scorer. You could argue he's their third best player. Russell Westbrook will be out another week with his quad injury. And the small piece of good news is that Bradley Beal went into COVID protocol and tested negative, and he's now available tonight. So the lineup they're going to move forward with is going to look a lot like the team that we saw last year that obviously wasn't all that good. I mean, you've got Denny FG in there. You've got Robin Lopez. But other than that, you know, it's going to fall on Davis Bertans, Bradley Beal, and Rui Hachimura. You know, Thomas Bryant missed a lot of last year with a stress fracture in his foot. So those guys had to carry the load, and they're going to have to carry the load again as Russell Westbrook stays out with this quad injury. That as of now, all we know is that it's a bruise and that there's no structural damage. So there's no concern that he'll be out long term, but he'll miss at least the next week. And right now that looks like another four games.
Chase, how many teams are there in the NBA?
30, 29, not named the Wizards.
Right, there are 30. And the Wizards are 30th in opponent points. I think everything starts with there. Regardless of who the personnel happened to be. Bryant wasn't guarding anybody. None of their wings can really keep up with anybody, it seems like. And at times, Beal and Westbrook are interested in playing defense. And they're not interested. They're like Vince Vaughn talking to his assistant about dating at the beginning of Wedding Crashers. I don't know how Brooks kind of gets to continue on here at this stage, Chase. What are your thoughts there on Scott Brooks's tenure?
Well, at 2-8 and in a contract year, obviously things are starting to look more and more bleak for him. I don't think the Wizards are going to be impatient with him, but, there's 6 games under 500. If it gets to 9-10 games under 500, I think things are going to get really interesting, and they'll have to consider maybe making a change. Although I will say, you look at his assistant staff, there's no logical person that you would promote who has a ton of head coaching experience or who is someone who is right on the cusp of getting a head coaching job. So, we'll see what they do with Scott Brooks. As far as the defense goes, 30th in points allowed. They were 30th in defensive rating last year. And if there's any positive that maybe moving forward you could find out of replacing Thomas Bryant is that he has been the defensive anchor of the worst defense in the NBA the last 2 years. Now, I don't put it all on him. I think there's been a lot more responsibility put on him when point guards and shooting guards are just blowing past their man and running at him full speed. But certainly the Wizards have not been good defensively with him in the middle. They're allowing teams to shoot over 40% from three, and they're allowing the most points and point attempts at the free throw line, the most free throws and free throw attempts. So they can't defend without fouling, and they're going to try to replace Thomas Bryant with Robin Lopez. Maybe they can get a little bit better rebounding the ball, a little bit better defensively. They're the second highest scoring team in the NBA, so if they could even put out an average defense, I think they'd be a playoff team, but obviously right now they fall way short of that.
Whew, what a mess of a start of the season it's been for the Wiz. Chase, thank you very much, buddy. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
See you, dude.
Appreciate the kind words as well. Let's talk baseball. Over the weekend, the Nats added another bat. So remember, Josh Bell was acquired via trade from Pittsburgh, a former All-Star, to play first base. They have signed Jesse Dougherty, joins us now. They have signed Kyle Schwarber to a one-year contract for $10 million. Jesse of the Washington Post, give us your thoughts on Schwarber and what this does for their offense. Is this enough?
I think it's a really good step for their offense, and I think it potentially could be. I mean, you're obviously banking on two guys being bounce-back candidates for 2021, and I think a lot of the advanced numbers tell the Nationals that they think both Josh Bell and Kyle Schwarber will get back to their old ways. And I think from a value perspective, if you were spending like you normally do, if you had a lot of wiggle room in your budget, then maybe you go for Michael Brantley on a 2 or 3 year deal. But base salary, $7 million for this deal for Kyle Schwarber, should leave room to build in other areas. I think rotation and bullpen are still big needs. So I like it from those angles. I think he does improve the offense. The defense wants to be figured out and isn't great. And then I think budget-wise, I think it's a smart move as well.
They're very left-handed in the middle, though, Jesse. That's my only concern, is that Bell hasn't hit well career against lefties. Schwarber sub-200 against lefties over the course of his career, striking out a ton. To me, I don't know that you got adequate protection for Juan Soto in the middle of that order. I know that people care less about splits than they ever have, but especially with some of the new rules about relief pitchers and the like, but they're very left-handed there in the middle. Anything coming to address that, or is this kind of it for the shopping list position player-wise?
I mean, I don't necessarily know for sure if this is it, but I think to address your point, you're definitely right in that it is lefty-heavy. Bell splits against lefties aren't great as a switch hitter, and Schwarber obviously is a big question mark too. And even with the three-batter minimum rule, this doesn't preclude the Nationals from facing really good left-handed starters and having to deal with that for 6 or 7 innings. So I do think it's a concern. I think, you look at Juan Soto, he's not really a lefty. And when you talk about splits, he hits both sides really well. So that's one thing that's not so bad. And then I think that if you trust that Bell maybe can improve from the right side, you feel pretty good. But I also think a guy like Ryan Zimmerman could go a long way. And I know, he'd come really cheap. He would, he'd come on a one-year deal, I think very similar to what he did last year. And I think he's a really good complement for Josh Bell at first for a right-handed starter. So if you do really worry, if you have a left-handed pitcher that really, really bullies lefties, a starter, you can sort of swap Zimmerman in there and get Bell a day off and then maybe live with Schwarber and hope that his numbers are not representative of how he'll fare against that guy. So I think the Nats know that. They've thought about this. But I think a right-handed complement at first base for Bell would go a long way. And Ryan Zimmerman fits that profile perfectly.
I want to go back to double-click on the first part of Danny's question, which is this it now for bats? Is this what they've done and the next move they make is on the pitching side. I mean, I was holding out hope for Michael Brantley. I think he would have been a better addition than Schwarber. He would have cost more, obviously. Did they just kind of go cost-friendly here and say Schwarber and Bell and we're done?
I would guess. I mean, I don't want to guess. It's not, I'm not really in the business of it, but I would. My hunch is yes. I think the holes you still have are that second first baseman, backup first baseman. I don't want to act like it's a platoon, and also a second catcher. And I don't think, unless you obviously spend on JT Realmuto, that the catcher you get is going to improve your offense that much. So I think that in terms of cosmetic changes to the offense, I would think that Bell and Schwarber are going to be the bigger additions this offseason, and the next wave of spending will come in the rotation and bullpen. But that said, the obvious spots where you could still really improve your offense are catcher and third base. Third base would, you know, there's Justin Turner's available. There's trade candidates too. And then catcher, there's JT Realmuto. And those are big spending moves. I don't know if the Nationals are in line for that, but if they were, that's what you could do. Anything short of that, I think, yeah, these are going to be the big ones that really address the offense.
Jesse, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it, man. Happy New Year to you.
Of course, guys. And congrats on the move to afternoon. Well deserved.
Thank you, buddy.
Much appreciated. It's our friend Jesse Dougherty of the Washington Post. That is your Beltway Blitz. We'll do it every day at 4 o'clock to cover three teams you care about, three things going on in sports that matter to you. By the way, the thing I do like about Schwarber a lot, other than home runs, because he's not particularly good defensively. He's going to strike out. He's not going to hit for a high average. So overall, as far as the move goes, it's a one-year deal. I like one-year deals. I don't think there's such a thing as a bad one-year deal. Maybe he comes in here, hits a bunch of bombs. He's got to be hungry because he hit 188 last year, and he's trying to say that that's not who I am, and I can hit, you know, 250, 260. I've proven that. So they want him to get back to doing that. He also is first team all, kind of has a body like you and me. And yep. I really like that. You know, I've stood next to him. I've interviewed him in person a few times. He's taller than me, not by a ton. I'm 5'8". I mean, he's probably 3 inches taller than me, I would guess, something like that. But right now, I'm definitely heavier than Kyle Schwarber in terms of frame. Like, I'm a mid-pandemic Grant Paulson. This is not, like, apex of my EMP 180 program, Grant Paulson.
Right.
But there was a time where me and Kyle Schwarber kind of had similar bodies. And I like that a little bit, that my baseball players sometimes can look like me.
He's here to hit it as far as he possibly can and enjoy the post-game buffet. You know what I mean? And there's something romantic about that.
He's a softball player that doesn't want to run the bases after he swings. So he's precisely. Just going to mash it over the fence and stay at home plate.
Like, he and I are really similar dimensions. Obviously, he's a pro athlete and has strength in his body, whereas I have frailty and sadness and disappointment. But, like, if you line us up right next to each other, there's a lot of similarities. It's facial hair. It's kind of a dude bro who just really wants to hit it really, really far. He's obviously, you know, he'll fit in any clubhouse. Seems like a really good guy. We had him on at the Super Bowl, if you remember, when he came back from that knee injury and just showed up in the World Series and just raked. Just amazing. By the way, people don't talk about that. Didn't face live pitching for like a year and a half. Walked into the World Series against Cleveland and just hit a couple bolts and balls off the wall and was interesting. Or it was really, really cool. And he was fun to talk to. So he'll be a good addition to this clubhouse. He'll fit in.
30, 26, 38 home runs in a three-year stretch in 17, 18, and 19. And this is an offense that needed power and that they lacked pop, and so they got that. I just hope he can make some more contact and hit for a higher average, because sub-200 this past season was worrisome, and that's not going to butter your bread like you'd like. All right, next, let's get into Taylor Heinicke's future. We'll look back at his performance on Saturday night, some of the highs. I don't know how many lows there were, but we can get into those as well, if there were any. And what does it mean? Is this a guy who could actually play for this team moving forward? A lot of folks in town would like to see that. With Danny, I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan.
Window Nation is kicking off a new year with their most popular deal to help you afford new Window Nation windows. How, you might be asking? Well, you call today and you make no payments for 2 full years and at half price. That's not all. You get 2 free windows for every 2 you buy, and you make no down payment. So you make no payments at all and pay no interest for 2 full years, GP.
Yeah, use the savings you save to pay off your high interest, those holiday credit card bills that are piling up on you. No time like right now to get a great deal from Window Nation. Best of both worlds. They've got their 000 buy 2 get 2 free offer, and it's ending soon. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. That's 866-90-NATION or windownation.com, so you can get 2 windows free for every 2 you buy. No limit. 0 payments down. 0 payments at all and 0% interest for 2 years. Tell them I sent you. Danny sent you. And they will take great care of you. It's windownation.com. At 6 o'clock in about an hour and a half on Grant and Danny here on The Fan, we'll be joined by Bobby Wilder, the longtime former head coach at Old Dominion, who was the only school to offer a scholarship to Taylor Heinicke. He came on our midday show a little over a week ago and basically said if Taylor Heinicke plays, you're in good hands. The guy's going to ball. It's all he's ever done. Every chance he's ever gotten, he's excelled. All he needs is an opportunity, and people don't get it yet, but he's actually outstanding. Yeah. Go back and sit in the corner over there and keep screaming your conspiracy theories about the people that you love. I apologize, Mr. Wilder, sir. You were right, and everybody else was wrong. So let's talk Heinicke. I'm watching the game, and with each throw and each scramble, he was earning himself more and more money among the people I was watching with. They were willing to give him a 10-year, $20 million contract because they thought for sure he'd sign it. Then it became a 10-year, $200 million contract. By the end of the night, he was getting Patrick Mahomes money. And, oh, by the way, they lost by 8, which is kind of funny, but speaks to the fact that you don't get to the playoffs very often. Here's what I'll say for Heinicke, Danny. You know how I like to think of myself from a scouting standpoint. When I put my little straw hat on and I get my stopwatch and my jugs gun and I throw my computer bag over my shoulder and I go sit behind the screen, I'm looking for the starter kit. If you throw 97 with a good breaking ball, I'll pack everything up and I'll zip up my little bag and I'll go home. I have seen what I need to see. And so in the case of Taylor Heinicke, what he did is what works in this league. He moved around. He made plays. He extended plays. He presented problems with his feet. There was a mobility and a creativeness and an off-schedule propensity that has become pertinent in the National Football League. Scrambled for 46 yards. In fact, it was actually 61 yards. He had a 15-yard run on a long third down.
A bogus holding call. Oh, don't get me started.
That was
bogus.
A terrible holding call.
So bad.
But really, it was a 60-yard gain on the ground. That doesn't happen every week. That I think you could probably count on one hand the number of times a Washington quarterback has run for 60 yards that wasn't Robert Griffin over the last 20 years. But I digress. As a passer, I think he lacks some arm strength, but he throws a soft, catchable ball. I think there are things physically that he doesn't do at a plus level, but he has enough of. In that game, I saw what it needs to look like. And so the question now is it there? Like, can a coach bring that out of him? And I'd love to dismiss it, like I dismissed, frankly, maybe incorrectly, his game against Carolina. Because it was against soft coverage and a team that really wasn't that invested defensively and didn't care and at times was playing a prevent look. This was the opposite of that, Danny. It's a top 10 defense with really good personnel trying desperately to stop you on every play because it's a playoff game and they don't want to go home. And he did it. So if he did it in that setting, why can't he do it again? I guess that is the question that we have to start this conversation with.
And oh, by the way, it wasn't as if you had some great running game and he was just doing play-action passes. It wasn't as if you were ripping off 6, 7, 8 yards a pop and gashing them, and it was everything they could do to stop that. You ran for probably 6 inches per carry, basically, when you handed it off. And I screamed at my television every time they tried to run Antonio Gibson on the inside. I go, that's a waste of a play. You just wasted a play and made it harder for this kid.
14 for 31 for Gibson, 2 for 5 for McKissick. So 16 for 36, 2-plus for those guys combined out of the backfield.
Yeah. Gibson had a long of 11 in the game, 13 for 20. That's a hot streak for Trey Turner. That's not what your running back should be doing in a meaningful football game. Just means you couldn't run it, but they tried. I guess that's cool. But man, oh man. So what he did is beyond impressive. What he did should kind of go in sort of the hall of justice. We should remember this all the time. I know they didn't win the football game, but it's miraculous. Again, this guy's emailing his college professor asking for an extension on an assignment a few weeks ago because he had to go play in the NFL football game. Sorry, professor, I'm not making it up. This isn't a dog ate my homework. I really am the quarterback of now the Washington football team.
Turn on NBC. They'll be talking about me.
Unbelievable. In between Chris Collins, we're talking about the Giants. But it's an amazing thing that he did. How sustainable is that? Here's what I know about this. In general, when we talk about scouting players and seeing some of the great things, I'm with you. There's a toolkit there that's exciting, that's fun. There's moxie. It was really enjoyable. I also know that defensive coordinators rarely get bested for that long. They got labs. They got film rooms. They got diet. They got all the sorts of the potions. They figure out what you don't do well, and then they make you do that all the damn time. And I don't know what that is at this point. You touched on arm strength. I think that's probably the major thing. He's not that big a guy. I remember him standing next to Tom Brady looking up like it's, Mr. Brady, thank you so much for the encouraging words. Best of luck to you on the way. And Brady towered over him like a foot taller, it looked like. So I think that's an element of it, too. How sustainable is that? Could this guy be your 16-game NFL-caliber starter on a playoff team at some point? It sounds unfathomable, but after one game, he showed you kind of what the ceiling is, right? He showed you that athleticism, the accuracy, throwing with anticipation, not just the near-crossing route that Alex Smith has majored in for however many years, but, you know, that deep late-breaking one where he was willing to wait an extra tick and let Terry McLaurin break open. That's the stuff I've wanted to see for this entire season with the Scott Turner offense, and he did that. So it becomes a really tough question.
The cold water, if there is any to pour on this, and the flip side of this is, I guess it's threefold. Number one is not particularly fair, but allow me to be this guy. There is still a reason why he was undrafted. You know, there are people that get paid millions of dollars in organizations all around the National Football League to find quarterbacks. And all of them looked at Taylor Heinicke for seven straight rounds and said, probably not. Now, that isn't enough to just say he doesn't deserve a chance, because there have been guys that people have been wrong about through the years, over and over and over and over again. Tom Brady was a sixth-round pick. Tony Romo just got named to the College Hall of Fame. Great example of a guy who came out of nowhere. We can go through the Kurt Warner stories that were bagging groceries and then going to the Hall of Fame. They're few and far between. Is there a chance that Taylor Heinicke's the next guy in that list that they'll be making 30 for 30s about? I guess that is possible, yes. So there's also a great chance, though, that he had a game like that and that it's hard to replicate or duplicate that. But that's the first thing is, from a physical standpoint, you know, when it came to recruiting him, when it came to signing him or drafting him, teams always kind of said, I'm not so sure, we're probably okay, thank you. So that doesn't just go away because you have, I'll even say, five good quarters, because I think he played a really good quarter against the Panthers in that 20-13 loss. Yep. The first time. He went 12 of 19 for a 137 and a touchdown. But the other two things, and I think they're more relevant here. The first of them is, it has not been all good. He did play in a game as a quarterback for the Carolina Panthers. In fact, he played in six of them, but he started a game and he threw three interceptions. And if you look back at that sample, he had some completions, he had some yards, the numbers were okay. But in that one start, he got hurt, and he threw three picks. So it's not like this is the first time he's ever played in the league, and his only sample is really good. Now, it was one game. It's a tiny sample, and you can dismiss that. But if you're going to do that, and I'm going to probably, by the way, you can't then just make this one game gospel. I will say that this game, because it was the playoffs against a defense like Tampa's, it probably deserves a little bit more weight than that one game with the Panthers against the Falcons. I talked to Logan Paulson. Maybe we can have him on later in the week. He was on that Falcons team, and he remembered that game. And he's like, dude, I remember watching that guy that day and just thinking, who is this dude? What is he doing here? He's like, I watched, and this is what we talked during the game. He's like, this is a different person. He's like, he looks like a completely different guy. So that's something to remember. And then the only other thing I'll say is, he has now been hurt the two times that he has started. Like, we've talked about his size. He's completely undersized. There's no denying that. He referenced himself today on the Junkies as sub 6 foot. I don't know what he actually is. He's listed 6'1", 210. But let's say he's 5'11 and 185 or 195 or whatever. In his two starts, he's gotten hurt two times. So that has to be part of this if you're actually talking about him being a starter. So here's my conclusion. He's on the team next year. He's coming to camp with me. I saw enough to be intrigued, Danny. I saw enough to want to see more. I think it is outrageous if someone wants to, like, sign him to a deal and make him the starter. I think it is foolish if people want to have a situation where he takes the first rep on day one as the starter. I want to do everything I can to go get Matt Stafford or, you know, whoever becomes available. If we want to play fantasy football, J.P. Finley was on earlier today kind of throwing crazy ideas out there. He's talking about Deshaun Watson and Derek Carr. I'll do all that stuff before I'll start Taylor Heinicke. But in a realistic world, let's say it's Kyle Allen, it's Taylor Heinicke competing for a job. He earned himself a right to be in whatever that conversation is if you can't do better. My goal is just, you've got an entire offseason now. Fix this problem.
Yeah.
Do better.
Yeah, they're back in the carousel, right? It's creative plan making. It's other teams' leftovers when they move on. It's the, you know, what I call the Case Keenum tier of quarterbacking. That's where they're at. And, you know, I'd almost rather go with inexperienced, you know, surprising upstart than journeyman Jag, who we know the score, that's very, very low ceiling. But to give you an idea, the last time Taylor Heinicke had momentum in this league, he won the backup quarterback job for Minnesota and got locked out of an apartment and spin-kicked the window and severed his tendon and was out for 3 months. And then we hadn't heard from him for 2 years since then. That's the same guy. So as you touched on, there's a reason someone like this is available. And it's a pretty good reason, to be honest with you. Not to pour cold water on it, because, again, what we just saw is amazing. But part of why it's amazing is because this is a dude that was out of football. And there were good reasons that he was pretty much out of football. You could always pick up the phone and find a Taylor Heinicke. That's what made this so much fun. That's what made this so damn cool, is that this particular Taylor Heinicke balled out on Saturday night. So does that mean he's my long-term answer? Not for me. And I know that's not a lot of fun today, right? Just sort of just a couple days removed from that performance. But does he get himself a training camp invite? Yeah. Is he probably on my roster? Yes.
I mean, of course he's not your long-term answer. I don't think any reasonable person would say he's the long-term answer. I told Rivera that, you know, fans in town are ready to sign him to a deal, and he chuckled into the phone. I mean, we get that. But my point is, he did enough that he should be in the mix. Now, we all want to go get a solidified, viable, bona fide starter. But if they don't do that, let's say next year Alex Smith is retired, and they bring in, I'm going to throw out Marcus Mariota just randomly, and that might mean that you have to trade for him, honestly, so maybe he's a bad example. But let's just say a guy of his caliber and resume.
But it's that tier, yeah.
Someone like him, and Kyle Allen is back, and Taylor Heinicke's back. Is he in a competition with those guys in training camp to start, or is he projected to back them up and they compete over him? That's the question to me. Did he put himself into the same kind of Kyle Allen, we brought in this guy who might start for us convo? Or is he still viewed as the little engine who could, who you tap on the head because he was taking the college classes?
It's a great question. So I think it's about who else comes here. If it's somebody else that's on, it's on reclamation, it's like the 3.0 version, which is what Mariota would be, right? A guy that failed out of Tennessee, was a backup Billy, had a nice couple of quarters for Oakland, and becomes available because he's expendable. Yeah, maybe Heinicke's competing. If you get a certainty, if you get Matt Stafford, if you get Matt Ryan, then I think that's kind
then
of
the
end of that.
Then he asks them where, how they like their coffee. I mean,
sure,
right? That goes without saying.
Yeah.
All right, what
but
if
I'm
it's just Kyle Allen? Like, he started.
And that's my point, yeah.
And Kyle Allen came in when he got hurt in Carolina, when he played for the first time. There was a time where he was ahead of him in the pecking order in Carolina. Let's open up the AAA Always On Call listener lines. We'll keep delving into this next. 800-636-1067. We're all blown away. I mean, we were completely wrong. I said that Smith should start and would give them a better chance because of his experience, even though I spent the entire season saying Alex Smith has not been a good quarterback, because I thought Heinicke would make way too many mistakes and would play you out of the game. And he not only didn't do that, he was one of the best things that team had going for itself. But what does it mean long term, and what does it mean for next year for him? That's the question on the Fan.
What's up, guys? Danny Rubio here for my friends at EMP 180. Okay, the new year has arrived, and I've told you in the past how EMP 180 has changed my life. Traditionally, what happens in the new year, we go to the gym for a couple days, we try to get fitter, we try to work it in, we get too tired, we lose track, and next thing you know, you're right back to where you were, right? I tried for years and failed, as I had no idea how to eat healthy. I thought I was, but I wasn't. Then I went to EMP 4 years ago, and the results have been amazing, okay? Kept the muscle, lost the body fat, and felt as good as I did when I was in my early 20s. So do what I did. Do what thousands of listeners have done. Go to EMP180. Why? They are like nobody else. They're your own nutritional coach and a personalized plan that will work for you. Not some app that you log into and have to figure out the nutritional value of an apple. They're not doing that. Your personal coach will help you along the way. They offer remote programs, safe in-person meetings, hybrid programs, the whole nine yards. So call 1-800-EMP-180. It's 855-888-0180. That's 855-888-0180 or EMP180weightloss.com.
Brent and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. 5 at 5, 15 minutes from now, all the biggest stories of the day. We'll go through them, break them down. We got to include Doug Peterson being fired in Philly. I just saw a comment, by the way, from Jeffrey Lurie, their owner, who I guess is meeting with the media today. And he said, does yep. Doug Peterson deserve to lose his job? No. As he's at the press conference announcing that Doug Peterson, who won the Super Bowl a couple years ago, got fired.
If only there was someone who had control over that, who was available to speak with us. If only his boss was around to figure out how and why we got here. Wow.
So the question we're asking you guys is, what did Taylor Heinicke's gem and that memorable, inspiring performance that very few people saw coming earn him moving forward within this organization? The way I see it, Danny, my ideal going into next year is that I've still got a starter who's not on the team right now, a superior option. I think their defense is good enough to win with right now. They didn't play like it on Saturday night. But I think they're a player or two away from being a championship-caliber defense. They were in the top five in yards and points. And while maybe that's a tad misleading this year, I think it could be more legitimate when they do that next time. So I want them to do everything they can and to move every mountain possible to get a quarterback this offseason and not to pull what I call a Chicago Bears under Matt Nagy and waste multiple years of a really good defense with Mitch Trubisky. In a perfect world, that's Watson. That's not happening. Maybe it's Matt Stafford. That's probably also unlikely. But if I'm calling the shots, I got a really good starter that I brought in this offseason, and then I've got Kyle Allen, who I'm bringing back, and Taylor Heinicke, who I'm bringing back. And maybe it's those three guys. Maybe Allen and Heinicke then compete for the number two job and the other one hits the market. I don't know. But what Heinicke earned is just a chance to be around the building and to be a part of the organization and to be in the league. Any more than that to me is probably overdoing it. I don't promise you anything. Ron Rivera just told us on the show earlier today he regrets giving the job to Dwayne Haskins, who was a first-round pick 1 year earlier, who had finished pretty well in his last game and a half of the previous season. So I'm certainly not giving Heinicke anything just based on one game. But I will hand him a contract and tell him show up in the weight room. We want to see you working hard, and I'll see you on the field come July.
It's probably the way I would handle it as well. I mean, their path to getting a quarterback is murky. That's what happens, honestly. When you're at number two and you don't take a QB, there's a pretty good chance you're not going to be back there again. And they played too well. They won their way out of a great spot to draft a quarterback at 19. Now, maybe a couple things shake out and they could slide up a little bit in the draft. Nothing to eliminate that possibility. But, you know, the point is you've got to expend either money, draft pick resources, or both to sign a guy that's going to be the answer. Because I don't think the answer is in their locker room right now. Now, the answer may be, who's our short-term bridge to the guy? Who's our Teddy Bridgewater here? Who is our Tyrod Taylor here to fill the need until they can find their next superstar, their franchise guy? But, you know, you don't apologize for being in the spot that you're in because of the ride you just took all these young players on. So there is a challenge when it comes to that. In terms of what I would do with Heinicke specifically, I don't think there's any way you can just say, thank you so much for that. We really appreciate it. Good luck with your college classes, and we can write you a letter of recommendation. Maybe we'll get you an internship. After that performance, at a minimum, he needs to be included in the quarterback room. I mean, he would be my third guy with the chance to move up if there really is a competition. Barring a name or barring any kind of developmental project that wows everybody with how ready to roll he is, Heinicke's in my quarterback room next year.
But not only as some just gift, you know, like some coupon you're handing him because he quote-unquote earned it and it's a fun story, you don't have one, and he might be one. So you yourself should invest some time and energy into him now. Mm-hmm. That game was better than what Alex Smith was giving you, was better than what Dwayne Haskins gave you.
It was their best quarterback game of the season.
Yeah, it put it into perspective. You know, I thought, and the analytics kind of proved this, but Kyle Allen was their most efficient quarterback this year. They didn't have good quarterback play at all. But if anything, it kind of puts into perspective, my goodness, I mean, Dwayne Haskins couldn't do anything like that. Alex Smith couldn't do anything like that. This guy can do this? This guy? We're killing Scott Turner in this offense for how terrible it is, and now we're looking at it move the football with this guy? If anything, it was kind of an indictment against everything else to me, and it makes you rethink, for those of you that were ready to move forward with who they had, is this really what we want to do? Let's try to mow through a few calls here. Bo's in Dunkirk on Grant and Danny. Hey, Bo. Let's go to line five. Carlos in Alexandria. Carlos, you're on the fan. What's up?
Hello.
Hey, great show, guys. Great show as always, and glad to see you in the afternoon. I think you're underestimating what this coach looks at in this player, and I think the answer was earlier in the call or in the the show today, Grant, when you asked him about, you know, what was some of his biggest mistakes, and one of them was not to have quarterback competition. And I think that was sort of a dog whistle to say that this kid's going to be in the competition next year, because you got to remember, you know, he sort of brought him along in Carolina and brought him up here for a reason. And So I think he's going to be in the competition more than you guys think, even if they do bring some of those name players in. And can I add one last point here? I think one of the best things and probably the most important thing that this coach did this year was he very meticulously narrowed down the needs of this team. And it's a lot less than it was a year ago. And I'll hang up and listen.
Amen
now.
On that. Thank you.
Appreciate
for the call, buddy.
Yeah, good point.
Hey, don't forget, Scott Turner. I mean, Ron Rivera, I'm sure, has to sign off and probably likes Heinicke as well. Scott Turner went and saw him at Old Dominion. No other coach in the league did. Then he brought him to Minnesota. Then he brought him to Carolina. Then he brought him to Washington. So he is the Heinicke backer and whisperer. He's the guy that it seems like goes to the mattress for him. And he's the OC. So if he's got any say,
it matters.
You know, he wants the guy back. Bo's in Dunkirk. Let's try him on line four. What's up, Bo?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
But
a couple things that I saw watching Heinicke the other day, and I saw it in the past game against Carolina as well, you know, which is very rare for quarterbacks in this league, especially ones just coming in and basically playing for the first time. He was able to step up, see the field, and understand what an open NFL receiver looks like. And then from there, able to step up with no hesitation, step up, not to mind you, in a rushed pocket all day long. He had pressure on, and to still be able to step up and pinpoint throws, make good reads, get rid of the ball quickly. He put the ball where it needed to be, where the receivers can make plays after the catch, which is huge in the NFL. And I'm not going to sit here, you know, I'm a realist, and say that, you know, he's going to be able to do that over a 16-game season. But at minimum, he's earned himself an opportunity to come in next year all the way. And I tell you, from what I saw, if the Redskins don't give him the opportunity, though he is a restricted free agent, I'm sure there's a couple handfuls of teams out there that would be willing to give him an opportunity.
Oh, somebody might, he's going to be in a camp, no doubt. Thank you. I mean, lock of the century, he's in a training camp next year, which is just funny because he was out of football. I mean,
he was
back up in the XFL.
In 2019, yeah.
For the record, he was on St. Louis, and I know people don't care about the XFL that much, but that team's quarterback was named Jordan Ta'amu, and he is in the league, and he was one of the two best quarterbacks in that league. So it was probably bad luck, frankly, that he ended up on that team, because that guy would have been competing for the MVP of the XFL. So maybe he could have started elsewhere. Like, he might have been the best quarterback here if he was in D.C. Do you think there's such a thing as adjusting to him? Like, in other words, I agree with the caller. He just said, I don't know if he could keep doing that over 16 games. We think about this as a baseball thing where a pitcher makes an adjustment to a hitter. But as there's more film and people see him more,
yes,
don't you think theoretically a defensive coordinator, we've seen it with Griffin, we've seen it somewhat with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson's offense getting worse this year. Don't you think there's something to be said for it's a little bit easier to do what he does when no one knows who you are yet?
Yeah, those guys ain't dumb. They stay up late, they figure it out. And the truly elite ones can rise above that. The truly great hitters and pitchers, doesn't matter what your adjustment is. They got an adjustment right back. I don't know how many more tricks he has in his bag. I know that Saturday was fun. I don't know how sustainable it is when the professional film breaker downers get a hold of him, figure out what he does.
5 and 5 is next. Grant and Danny.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.